Great to have you along here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. Wisconsin is a water lover's paradise, as I mentioned. And after, you know, after all, our state is really derived from an Algonquin word, honoring water. We have thousands of lakes, streams, and rivers. I wonder how many thousands of miles of lakeshore we have, and you add in the rivers. It's got to be, well, maybe our guests will know. We'll find out as we talk with them, because we want to visit about taking care of our private shorelines and what you can do to help your local lake. With us, Lori Hayden. Lori is the Watershed Protection Coordinator for the Wisconsin DNR's Water Quality Program. She's part of the Wonderful Waters of Wisconsin Initiative. And Lauren also provides support and coordination for the Healthy Lakes and Rivers team. Lauren, welcome to the show.
Hi, Larry. Thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have you with us. Appreciate it very much. Eric Olson is Director of Extension Lakes at UW Stevens Point. And Eric, good to see you. Thanks for joining in.
You bet. Thanks, Larry.
As we talk with our experts, I hope you'll join in. You live near or on a river or a lake or maybe a pond. How important are the state's rivers and lakes to your quality of life? Maybe you could tell us what you're doing right now to improve the health of your shoreline, or maybe you have a question about how you could do a better job of improving the health. Give a call. The number, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk at WPR.org. That's talk at WPR.org. Do we have any idea of how many miles of shoreline we have in the state of Wisconsin?
Larry, I do. If you include the Great Lakes, which is a good chunk of it, we're looking at about 13,000 miles or 68 million feet of shoreline in Wisconsin.
Oh, my. Well, you know, just in general, what's the status of shoreland in Wisconsin? I'm sure it varies lake to lake and stream to stream and everything else, but are the shores in good shape?
Well, I think of that shoreline, you know, there's really a mix. There's a lot of it is actually public land. We're fortunate. If you go up north, there's lots of state forests and national forest land that really isn't developed, hasn't been modified much in the last 100 years. That represents about 7,000 miles of the 13,000. So really almost half of our shoreline is in public hands. The private shoreland is a little bit more heavily used, let's say. People really get out there and modify it. We've got piers, we've got people mowing grass down to the shore, all sorts of things. Lauren might have some numbers about what sort of the statewide picture of shoreland health looks like, but it's really mixed.
Lauren, do you want to talk about that?
Sure. I think, unfortunately, we don't, you know, have a nice, neat stat to say in Wisconsin how much shoreline we've lost. I know that's something that our great neighbor next door in Minnesota has started looking to. I think they estimate in Minnesota about 50% of natural shorelines have been lost. And I'm not going to make a guess here in Wisconsin what that looks like. But like Eric said, we've definitely seen a lot of development in certain parts of the state. But I think we're also very fortunate here in Wisconsin to have, you know, protective shoreline zoning and a lot of great resources, you know, to restore those shorelines that maybe have been previously developed.
Yeah. What's this Healthy Lakes and Rivers program that you're involved with, Lauren? What are its goals?
Yeah, well, the key goals of the Healthy Lakes and Rivers program are to improve water quality and habitat using five key best practices. And those best practices are designed to help capture and filter runoff that's coming from the hard surfaces of on our property, right? Like roofs and driveways and decks, as you guys were just talking about.
Yeah.
And then also to help stabilize the shoreline and prevent erosion. So can talk a little bit more about those five practices, but those are the goals. And I would just emphasize that the program is a partnership between the DNR, Extension Lakes, our nonprofit partner Wisconsin Lakes, and then the many like boots on the ground local partners who make this happen. So it's really kind of a a technical resource program in addition to some funding assistance as well.
Yeah, well, and Extension Lakes, maybe Eric, you could tell us more about Extension Lakes. How do you work to preserve the lakes?
Sure. So we have an office based here at UW-Stevens Point, but our footprint is statewide. We try to communicate to over 250 lake districts, which are local units of government, as well as hundreds of lake associations. Wisconsin has a long history of shoreline property owners working together, collaborating, figuring out, do we want to form a nonprofit lake association? Do we want to form a lake district, which is a taxing entity? And then how do we strategically work through our issues to protect and restore lake water quality? Our office, Extension Lakes, provides training and technical answers related to really those organizations. How do they get themselves up and running and how do they function? And we like to promote to them that this Healthy Lakes and Rivers program is sort of what we'd call a low-hanging fruit. It's a thing that they can just grab onto and say, hey, let's implement this. Let's actually do some native plantings on the shoreline. Let's get some property owners to try to put in rain gardens to infiltrate stormwater. It's all set up and ready to go. And even though there is a grant application process through the DNR, it's meant to be streamlined. It's meant to be easier for people to follow.
I went online to the Healthy Lakes site, the Healthy Lakes and Rivers Program site. It's a pretty cool site with a lot of information in it. But and we'll get to that in a bit more. But you're talking about lake districts. Doug in Colfax has something that relates to that. Doug, hello.
Hi, Larry. Great topic. Thank you. Taylor Lake near Menominee, Wisconsin, has got quite a blue-green algae problem, and a lake district was just formed within the last couple of years. And the watershed is pretty large. It's part of the Red Cedar River. I went to a presentation about 10 years ago, and there was a presenter that explained how in the Fox River Valley some years ago, they had their greatest success cleaning up that body of water by multiple organizations working together. And I'm just wondering what your comment is on how to get that going so that we can have a bigger impact with multiple organizations that are in the same watershed.
Yeah. Oh, that's an excellent point. I'm sure both of our guests are going to have comments on it. Maybe. Well, Eric, you want to start? And then we'll go to Lauren.
Yeah, we're really fortunate over in Western Wisconsin to have another extension person who's actually based in that region. His name is Dan Zur. And Dan's been taking a real leadership role in trying to pull together the different organizations in the Red Cedar watershed. So you can actually find Red Cedar watershed-based plans. They have lots of analysis, lots of research done. And the challenge now is how do you actually implement things? How are you going to turn the knob and get things actually going? And the Lake District is just one mechanism. It's where the people down at sort of the receiving end of the watershed, the impoundment just outside of Menominee, they're agreeing that they're going to tax themselves a bit so they could fund some projects. And a Lake District can fund, for example, farmer conservation projects up in the watershed. They can match that money with county dollars, state dollars, federal dollars. Really, our approach is based on collaboration. What Lauren and I would point out is that those same shoreland owners in the Lake District, it really would be nice if they did some things on their shoreland too. You know, it maybe doesn't have the same exact impact as protecting maybe hundreds of acres up in the watershed, but it demonstrates good faith and that everyone around the lake is actually pulling in the same direction.
Yeah. Lauren, something to add there.
Sure. I think Eric brought up a lot of great points, but I'm excited by this question. I think, something at the DNR, a lot of my colleagues love to see is, are people taking a watershed approach to these kind of water quality issues? And, you know, when different groups out there are preparing watershed management plans, thinking about who needs to be at the table and engaging shoreline owners as part of that process. I really think, like Eric said, that we need to kind of embrace a stewardship mentality and recognize that we're all part of a watershed, whether you're 80 miles from a lake or 10 feet from the lake. So, I love that question and that enthusiasm.
And Doug, have you worked with Dan Zur at all or spoken with Dan? Oh, we might have lost. Maybe we lost Doug. I just wondered if you had, how would Doug or anybody else for that matter in that region get a hold of Dan. I assume online it'd be pretty easy to do.
Yeah, Dan's going to regret me saying this, but his last name is Zerr, Z-E-R-R. If you just search Dan Zerr and Extension online, you're going to find his contact information. All of our UW-Madison Division of Extension people all across the state, we're really there to field your questions and try and connect you with answers. So Dan has just been a really great person. He also has a radio voice. He's a musician in his free time. So give Dan a call or send him an email and find out how you can get more involved.
Well, it's really good to hear Doug talking, because there's a person who's quite interested. And as I think about this, let me put it this way. How much influence do shoreland owners have over the health of the lakes and streams that they kind of live right on top of practically? Lauren, do you...
Yeah, I'm happy to take a stab at that. I think Eric might have touched on this earlier, but that really depends on the land draining to the lake or river, that the watershed that we're talking about and the size of it. So there might be some watersheds that are really large and have, you know, farmlands and a lot of urban areas draining to the lake, or we might have some smaller watersheds, for example, up north, these smaller seepage lakes, for example, that don't have as much influence coming in. So understanding your watershed definitely makes a difference, but I would argue that I can't think of a single lake or river in the state that wouldn't benefit from enhancing their shorelands with native vegetation and creating habitat. I think it all incrementally makes a big difference. And even if that, you know, it takes a while from a water quality perspective, I think people would be very surprised to see how quickly wildlife will return to an area when you start that restoration process. We do site visits and we'll come out, you know, 2-3 years later, and it will just be buzzing with pollinators and bird songs. There'll be a turtle basking on a log someplace and minnows, you know, swimming amongst the under the log. So I think it, you know, depends on how you're measuring success, right, and health.
I was going to ask about shoreland development and what an impact it's had on animal populations, and it sounds like it has had a pretty good big impact.
Yeah, absolutely. There's been a lot of research out there that shows, you know, that as these shorelands get more developed, we lose more frogs, songbirds, the fish populations decrease, and then also even things like game fish growth rates can decline as well. And that's just kind of like the tip of the iceberg. So there's, you know, a pretty strong correlation between the health of our shorelands and the health of our wildlife. I believe they estimate that 90% of aquatic species at some time in their life, you know, rely on the shoreline buffer zone for habitat, food, or nesting, and about 70% of terrestrial or land-based species. So they are completely intertwined.
Yeah. Gary in Elko, Wisconsin, has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Gary.
Hi. Yeah, thank you for taking my call. Appreciate the show. I have some waterfront in Elko, Wisconsin, on one of the lakes, and I'm getting erosion. Want to stop the erosion. I see other neighbors have put stones and done retaining walls. I'm curious if there's regulations and suggestions for what to use. And I have close to 400 feet of frontage, so I've got a lot to cover.
Yeah,
appreciate the help.
All right, thanks, Gary. Where does Gary start?
I think Gary can go ahead here.
Well, there's a couple places you can start. There's lots of online resources. Up where you're at in Elko, you might want to reach out to your county land and water conservation office. They usually have staff on board to help with some technical questions. The practices that Lauren and I are talking about, these healthy lakes practices, aren't really designed to handle erosion-related issues, something where you might kind of need a little bit of engineering or someone to figure out what exactly is going on. Unfortunately, we do see maybe a lot of cases where people are putting in hard practices, stones, and other things where maybe they're actually not called for, they're not needed. And I know right here in central Wisconsin, I can find places where it's just boulder after boulder after boulder, it's just overbuilt. And that's not really helpful for riparian habitat, the types of things that Lauren was talking about. Would really like to see some way to use softer practices, native plants that have deep rooting systems that are going to hold that soil in place. But it really depends on the site. And that's kind of why your land and water conservation technicians that can come out and look at it will give you some sound advice.
So, Gary, so it's the land and water. Give us the exact spot where he should be going.
So it'd be the Langlade County, I believe, is where Elko is at. Mm-hmm. The Langlade County Land and Water Conservation Office. Kind of Google that and you'll get some names. I can't remember all the 72 counties and who their people are, but there's a great workforce out there in our counties. They are looking to pick up these kind of projects and make sure, especially if there's active erosion, they want it. Their job is to help keep soil in place. That's kind of their mission. And they're waiting for your call. It may not be right. They're not probably not going to come out today, but you get on a list and you start to communicate with them. And they might even have some other tools that they can share with you. The DNR has partnered with counties actually on a number of technical guides that really help think through what might be the cause of your erosion.
But Gary might likely probably get somebody come out and take a look from that.
Correct.
From the agency. Yeah. Gary, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Lauren Hayden, Watershed Protection Coordinator for the Wisconsin DNR Water Quality Program. Eric Olson, Director of Extension Lakes at UW Stevens Point. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. We're taking a look at what you can do to improve your shoreline and help out your local lake or river or stream or maybe even pond with our two guests, Lauren Hayden of the Wisconsin DNR, Eric Olson, Director of Extension Lakes at UW Stevens Point. Tom in Fitchburg has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Tom.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I was just calling to ask what types of shade trees you would recommend for a lakeside property in Washara County.
Okay, we've got some lakeside property in Washara County, Lauren. What are good shade trees for that situation?
I'm always particular about, you know, coming out to the property itself and seeing the native ecosystem there. So I would first say take a walk in your neighborhood and see what's out there. But I think for Washara County, you can't go wrong with some nice oaks next to the shoreline, some of our beautiful maples. I personally like a mix of both deciduous and coniferous trees. We do have within, not to plug again, Healthy Lakes and Rivers, but within our native planting guide, we do include specific tree and shrub recommendations. So I would include a mix. We want to make sure that there's, you know, habitat at all three levels. And I personally think it just looks nicer when you have, you know, maybe a red oak or dogwood right next to your, you know, red oak or something like that.
So the website, if you just type in Healthy Lakes and Rivers.
Yep. You'll find it. And then when you go to the website and you select best practices right at the top of the page, it'll lead you to our page that walks through the native plantings, rain gardens. And you'll see that for every one of the practices, there is a fact sheet that kind of does a general overview of the practice, the rough cost, what are the grant requirements, and then there's also a technical guide that goes into easy step-by-step instructions. And for the native plantings, that includes really nicely made planting plans that were developed by Patrick Goggins.
Outstanding. Tom, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Jim in Winnebago County, what's on your mind?
Afternoon, Larry. Much of the discussion so far has taken place about what one can do on land to protect the shorelines. But there's a real threat that's taking place from the water as well. Probably know that there are large boats called wake boats that are designed essentially to produce extremely large wakes. And there are a number of conservation organizations, Wisconsin's Green Fire among them, that has been working very diligently to try to make sure that those wake boats, when they are operated in the lake, are operated in a manner in which the shoreline is not completely inundated by these very large waves and that the bottom isn't turned up. The University of Minnesota just got done with a really extensive study about this and about the damage that wake boats can cause to lakes and to the shorelines. So I'd like to make people aware that there are threats to those shorelines and there are organizations that are doing everything that we can to cause that to not happen. Thank you.
Jim, thanks very much for calling. Comment from, well, Eric, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, this isn't the first time we've had a water recreation challenge in Wisconsin. The reason why we have a statewide association of lakes, Wisconsin lakes, is because in the 1950s and 60s, people were starting to bring out boats that had toilets on them into the lakes. So these were houseboats. These were really large boats. And there was a lot of head scratching about, well, wait a minute. If you bring a boat with a toilet out on a lake, what's your real plan here? What are you going to do? And so there was a controversy around these boats with heads or toilets. And mm-hmm. we came up with a policy that said you can really only operate a boat with a toilet on a lake that has the services to offload that waste. You can't just take a houseboat on any lake in Wisconsin. And we've kind of come to an agreement on that. We had a problem with, I think, personal watercraft when they first came on the scene, also known as jet skis. And the state of Wisconsin said, you know what? Maybe they should operate further away from shore than other boats. You know, we came up with a policy that actually extended the distance at which you operate a jet ski, and you can't just buzz past other boats on your jet ski. So right now the debate in Wisconsin is how to handle this next one. What are we going to do about artificially enhanced wakes, and how do we, it's not just the shoreline zone and the native plants. There's a lot of issues surrounding it. So I encourage anybody who's interested in this just to start looking at some of the options and the solutions that are being discussed.
Thanks very much for that question. Appreciate you're calling in today. Appreciate it very much. How much, somebody wants to know, how much money do you need to invest in order to improve a shoreline? Of course, so it depends, Lauren, on the, you know, somebody earlier caller had 400 feet. I think I had 50 feet on Lake Monona, which is a whole different situation entirely.
Yeah, so when the program developed the grants, it was decided that they would be $1,000 per practice, and it's a cap of $25,000, you know, for any organization applying. But typically, so for the $1,000 grant, that usually covers more than enough plants for a 350-square-foot native planting or rain garden of a similar size. And I would argue would have enough money maybe for some, you know, compost and mulch, too. We have, we're lucky here in Wisconsin to have a lot of native plant suppliers who I think, you know, provide really reasonable prices. And the good thing with native plants too, is you don't need to buy, you know, big gallon sizes. You can get these small plugs in a 2-inch pot and you'll be amazed at how much they'll grow in just a few years. So again, it's a $1,000 grant and that covers the 350 square feet. So for example, if you wanted to do two 350 square foot gardens, you can come in for two practice grants under that program.
And where do people go to get the information for applying for those grants?
So they can start by, again, heading to the Healthy Lakes and Rivers webpage, just by Googling Healthy Lakes and Rivers. And then we have a grants page on there. I do want to emphasize that individual shoreline property owners cannot apply for grants. It needs to be an eligible organization that applies on their behalf. So that could be a lake association or a district, a conservation group, and a municipality. And we have a process through the DNR to determine who is eligible. But that's all those great details are on the website. And it's a year-round application. So even if you wanted to get that started today, you could go to our website and start that grant process.
But do it through the Lakes Association, perhaps.
Exactly. Reach out and see if they may be willing to support you. And I would encourage anyone who's listening who might serve on a lake association or work for a municipality to, you know, get multiple homeowners into one grant application, just since you can have one open at a time. And obviously, we'd like to kind of see that continuity within a watershed or on an individual lake or river.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So what if I don't own land on a shoreland? Or anybody else for that matter, what can we do to improve our local lake?
Well, one thing I want to point out, so we kind of buried the lead. The DNR is willing to cost share and pay for these types of practices, a rain garden, for example. And the rain garden eligibility extends anywhere within 1,000 feet of the shoreline of a lake or 300 feet of a river. So you're in that sort of riparian area. You might be across the street. You might be a little bit down the block. Even in the city of Madison, if you're within that 1,000 feet, you can get cost share money to put in a rain garden. And that's true all across the entire state of Wisconsin. And anywhere you are in Wisconsin, you're in a watershed. So these types of kind of thinking about what kind of plants you have in the landscape and then thinking about where your storm water is headed, that should be something that everybody does. Think about putting in rain gardens and rain barrels, slow down the flow, make running water walk instead of run.
And on that note, we are out of time. I didn't get to all the questions, so we'll have to have you back to do this again, Lauren, I tell you, and Eric. Thank you both so much for being with us today, and we'll do it again. Thank you. Lauren Hayden, Watershed Protection Coordinator for the DNR and the Water Quality Program, and Eric Olson is Director of Extension Lakes at UW-Stevens Point. We'll get them back, and we'll do this again with them. I think there's more that we could have discussed today. Thank you so much for listening today. This and all our shows are a team effort. Our producers, Clara Neipert and Joel Patnod. Technical directors, Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins. Our executive producer, Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. We'll talk about how to take care of your trees on Garden Talk tomorrow, and we'll look at bulb lawns as well. In the meantime, thank you for listening, and stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.